Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Good. Okay. Hello. Welcome to episode 223 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and Sean Orford. How are you doing, Sean?
I'm very good.
You're not in a car park in Asda, are you?
No. I'm in the 38th floor of an apartment in Qatar.
In Qatar. Yes. You're back over there, eh?
Yep.
Nice. What's the average? You know, what's the temperature at the moment? Is it hitting 50 or?
No, it's a bit lower. It was in the mid-30s when I arrived, but the humidity is very, very high. So it's cooled down a bit. It's probably going up 38 to about 42 at the moment.
That's a bit more manageable, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You can feel the difference. And they reckon that in a couple of months it'll be down below 30.
Very nice.
Yeah.
All right, well, when it does hit that, get me I expect my invitation and first class
come on out.
Business class ticket across and can't wait to see you over there. We're talking about cyberchondria today, aren't we, in this week's episode, and generally about anxiety and how we think it's on the rise and why it might be on the rise, but we'll come on to that shortly. Liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. Take a look for all the show notes and links, as ever, lots of them. Sean has written a blog post to accompany this as well. We do have a book on sale in stock, Living the Present by Sean Orford.
Amazing.
And you can get 10% off it if you stick in the discount code that will be sent to you if you sign up to our email list. But lots of cool freebies as well. Meditation files good. and whatnot. Pretty good, eh, Sean?
Yep, very good.
What have you been up to then, apart from your blood pressure dropping as you get on that plane and head across the Middle East?
I relax.
Yeah.
I've just been in a crazy work cycle. I was thinking, because we've been in Italy, and I came back and just walked into a storm of things to be done. So it's been a crazy week back from Italy and then off here. Really. The one good thing is that whilst I've been away, we've had our pizza oven fitted.
So finally.
I should come back and be making pizzas and bread and stuff.
We should do a pizza oven podcast. In fact, that could be a whole other podcast on its own, couldn't it? Pizza Oven Podcast with Sean, Ed.
Yeah.
I'm Ree.
Yeah.
Get Ree on that one.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah, look forward to seeing that. It's
everybody.
Been a long time in the making. Do you think you're going to use it much, your pizza oven? Let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the idea of using it as a slow cooker and things like that. There's a lot of things to do with it that would be fun.
How long is it, like a wood-fired one? You chuck the wood at the back of it?
Yeah.
How long do you have to wait, and how do you know when it's at the right temperature? This is a bit off topic here, but
you use a thermometer. It'll go up to about 500 degrees maximum. You can cook a pizza in about a minute and a half, 2 minutes.
Yeah, nice thin base and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's going to be the fun. The other thing is that because I don't eat meat, as you know, but a lot of the family do. And one of the things that they're all craving is having a roast dinner cooked in the pizza oven.
Blimey.
Which is supposed to be amazing, they say.
Not all of it, I assume.
Everything. Yeah, the lot.
Blimey, at a lower temperature. You don't want to do a chicken or a turkey at 500 degrees, I assume.
No, apparently, and I need to experiment with this, if you heat the oven up and get it really hot and then put what you want in it and just close it down, it works like a slow cooker. So you can come back 24 hours later and everything is cooked perfectly.
Blimey.
So it's a case of playing with it, really.
Yeah, we'll play on other people's digestive systems, first of all, and when you've cracked it, give me a shout, okay?
Yeah, that's cool.
Cool.
So what have you been up to then?
I've had a family, a wedding this weekend gone. My brother got hitched, which was a beautiful affair. I want to give a shout actually to Brimstage Hall, the house it's called. Recently been taken over. I've been going there They used my brother and now sister-in-law Lorena's wedding as their first event, actually, and it all went swimmingly, and they did an amazing job, and it was a fantastic day. So I've had an amazing weekend with family, actually, feeling pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah, and my sister-in-law Lorena's Colombian, and then my brother met her in Spain, so it's a proper internet. It was an international affair. I was best man.
Yeah.
I didn't do a bilingual speech, sadly. Couple of little translations here and there from my brother.
And did you show him up in the speech, or were you good?
I was reasonably good, yeah. I was, yeah, it's a bit of a safe bet when you pick your brother as best man, which I did, so he had to anyway. But I've had a few nights out with him, but I wasn't there for all his uni days and all that potential crazy stuff, so nothing too embarrassing, you know. So, a few little anecdotes and stories, but... It was good, and the weather was a bit crazy at the weekend over here. It was kind of lashing it down all morning, but then the heavens cleared, and it was blue sky all afternoon. And,
lovely.
Absolutely perfect. So, yeah, top notch. I'm feeling good.
Yeah.
Should we crack on with this week's show?
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
you sent me this article, which I'll put in the show notes on the Telegraph, about cyberchondria fueling anxiety. Tell us a bit about it, Sean.
In the article, they're saying that one in five people that are going to the GP at the moment are going because they've been Googling their symptoms and Googling ideas, coming up with problems, and then going to the GP with them. And what they're saying is that we're wasting sort of 20% of our appointments with the doctors because of Google. Dr. Google.
Yeah, okay. I was sort of guilty of that recently myself-ish. I didn't get into a blind panic, but yeah, I've had this little, on my chest, a little kind of skin abnormality, shall we say. Mm-hmm. My dad had actually had a couple of things lasered off or frozen off in the past, so, I Googled, like, what it kind of looked like or found something that looked similar, mm-hmm. and it said, skin cancer! Possibly. So obviously, yeah, that was a bit like, blooming heck. Booked an appointment. It turned out it wasn't. It doesn't seem to be. It was more of a kind of bacterial thing. Apparently, I've been using this oil cream and it hasn't been doing anything, so I need to go back. That's by the by. But aren't people better being safe rather than sorry? Or are you more concerned about the fact that it's building up this anxiety in people?
Well, no, I think that the thing for me, because the article suggests that people are wasting the GP's time. The thing that comes over to me when I look at those behaviours is that if people have that level of anxiety, then they actually have an anxiety problem. So they do have a problem. It's not they don't have a problem. And one of the things that we know from people that are generally anxious is that if we were to solve their health anxiety, what they do is transfer that kind of anxiety onto something else. So it would be fear of flying or fear of something else.
Yep.
What we have to deal with is the anxiety itself, and that's what we're not doing. If people do go to the GP and they get seen and they acknowledge it as anxiety, they tend to give them a kind of antidepressant to bring the anxiety level down. But the problem is it doesn't solve the underlying issues.
Yep.
We're just maintaining the problem. So my interest is, where does the anxiety come from? Why are we becoming more anxious?
Yeah, and virtually all the shows we do on this podcast boil down to anxiety in one form or another. Generally, as you've kind of worked over the last 20, 30-odd plus years in your field, are you seeing rises in anxiety?
Yeah.
Despite the fact that, you know, we're living longer, generally we're healthier, eat better.
I think that's part of the problem. It's like if you look at, just say, two generations ago, the same person who was riding a horse and cart is now flying a jumbo jet. That nothing's actually changed for us, but what we do has changed hugely. It's very, very different now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're saying that we eat better, but if you go into a supermarket and you've got a choice of 100 cheeses, the stress level on picking a cheese is huge. If you've got a choice between, do you want cheddar or Wensleydale, you know, it's a simple choice. The stress isn't there.
It's not just cheddar though, is it? It's mild cheddar, medium, strongly cheddar. Yeah. Oh my word. I'm getting anxious just thinking about it. The cheese choice.
Everything you think of. It's like if you go and buy a pair of shoes, how many pairs of shoes do you have to choose from? Yeah. And I'm not suggesting that we should have some kind of impoverished way of living. But what I'm saying is that we build in our stresses into ourselves. You know, we're doing it. Yeah. So what is it that makes you anxious?
Good question. Yeah, I was just thinking about that, actually. Well, the only times I've seriously been anxious or worried in my life have tended to be financially related. So, you know, the last couple of years plus, a bit longer maybe, business has been all right, so it hasn't been too much of a trouble. But early on when I was setting up on my own, or perhaps when kids started coming along, and I still had to kind of, you know, find all this work without a regular salary, that's when anxiety was at its maximum for me, big time. You know, it's been a while, but yeah, it's not a pleasant feeling, to be honest. So, yeah, and you know, I'm reasonably well off-ish as well, you know, in kind of even national, certainly on global terms.
Yeah.
So imagine what it must be like for those that are really struggling, you know, living day by day on X amount, you know, whatever it is, 5 or 10 a day, who knows what they have to get by on.
But one of the problems that I see, and I get this with clients, but also you can read it, is that the average family in Britain is holding just under £13,000 worth of unsecured credit card debt. And that's without mortgages or car loans.
Well, and that's stuff that people are probably going to bed worrying about, isn't it?
Well, I think all those things create an anxiety, because I think it comes in layers. It's like if media convinces us that we need something, you know, we need the latest phone. Like, what's the matter with the phone that we got? We've got to have the latest phone. So we get the stress and the anxiety of needing the phone, and then we have to pay for it somehow. So then we then get it on credit, either on a card, or we get it through the telephone provider. And then once we do that, we're in a situation where we've got the anxiety of paying it off. And that happens on so many levels, whether it's store cards or whatever. And it's dead easy to do. But we just create an anxiety. It's like people say, I need to go on holiday to get a break. Mm-hmm. But they pay for the holiday on their plastic and then spend the next year paying it off and have to do overtime to pay them. You know what I mean?
I do. Yeah. There's pressure from all angles in there. I mean, obviously, we had the old financial crisis, which is probably coming up to close to 10 years anniversary of that.
Yep.
Which hit a lot of people hard, probably hit everyone in the world to a certain degree or another.
Yeah.
We're still dealing with the aftermath of that, really, aren't we? One of the things that certainly in our country kicked off was super low interest rates, which for folks my age is all right, because we got mortgages which are reasonably low, and if the interest rate went up, would be absolutely screwed. But on the other hand, money is cheap at the moment. I was pretty shocked actually last year when we got a loan to pay for some building work at our house. Just I was building up anxiously in the month or two beforehand, once we'd had a quote in that we'd found the builder we wanted to go with. What if we can't get the loan? What if it's the bank says no or whatever? What are we going to do? So I kind of put it off and off and off until about a few weeks before he was about to start, and obviously that he was going to need some dosh. So I went on the bank website, yada yada, filled in a few boxes, clicked submit. I'm not kidding you, like, it was less than 5 minutes from starting the process to clicking agreed, and £12,000 was in my bank account. like I didn't have to send off any forms, didn't have to upload passport or like confirm, I don't know, pay slips from my wife or anything like that. It was way too easy. It's crackers.
But the thing is, it makes you realize that these organizations, banks or whatever, know so much about you that you have a credit rating. So there's all these services, aren't there, where you can check out your credit rating online and you can improve your credit rating and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so what you're describing is a stress in itself, isn't it? People need stuff done. They go try and get loans for it, and then they can or they can't get it, or they've got to pay interest rates over the odds.
Yeah.
One of the things about cheap money, like you're describing now, is that I can remember a financial ding-dong that went on a while ago where money was cheap. Everybody got heavy, heavy mortgages. And then the interest rates went up like crazy. They went up to like 15%.
And I've heard stories about that in the 90s.
Yeah, people going into negative equity, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Crazy world. Yeah. So it can come back to bite you when you know, people get huge, huge mortgages because money's cheap.
Yeah.
And that's okay when it's cheap. But as soon as the interest rate goes up, then they're in a mess.
No? I know. Yeah, we've almost kind of boxed ourselves in a bit now because the interest rates have been low. I'm not no economist, but they've been so low for so long. We're in a reasonably good position financially. So I was saying how, if interest rates, there's these 12 people that get together, don't they? The Bank of England once every quarter, I think. They get to decide what the interest rates are going to be or whether they're going to go up or down.
Yeah.
I think how many hundreds of thousands of people must be kind of every 3 months just nervously watching the news, thinking, blow me a neck, we're right on the edge here.
Yeah. Think of all the business owners too, because I mean, if they are in debt for equipment or whatever, or resources, they're in the same position, aren't they?
Yeah. So maybe we're in a world now of permanent low interest rates. I don't know. Can't see how they can start to. Well, they'd have to start bringing them up at some point, but gradually, I would assume. But yeah, I've heard people have told me about in the 90s when interest rates were like 12-15%, something crackers like that.
Yeah,
can't imagine
it now. It was bonkers.
But you got through it, didn't you, Sean?
Yeah. but the thing is, you can get through anything if you don't press the anxiety button. Once you press the anxiety button, you're really in a mess. I was telling you last time, wasn't I, about that going in on that flight into Cork and everybody screaming and anxious because the plane's bouncing in the wind and there's this little four-year-old girl going, wee, wee, really enjoying it. Because she hadn't pressed the anxiety button. She was having fun.
Yeah.
You know.
So what's the secret for any of us that are over the age of, I don't know, 10, 15, to live perhaps not on a plane that's crashing or about to crash and burn, but for who's perhaps under financial pressure, you know, or pressure at work. What's the secret to not?
I think there's several things in that for me. One is you need to live in the present, which is staying where you are. But the other one is to be grateful and thankful for what you've got and to stop craving after needing, wanting, doing more things. It's the issue about, you know, how many shoes, how many handbags, you know, how many telephones, how many this, how many that. It's like our lives could be quite simple and very happy. We don't have to live in this consumer world where we need more and more of stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
And I guess it's okay having stuff if it doesn't create anxiety for you.
You know? How can we find that balance here? Because, I mean, we've all seen probably travel documentaries or things on TV, film, whatever, of tribes or people that are far less well-off financially than us in the West, but seem to be happier. And yet, you know, they have lower, probably, mortality rates. They don't live as long. Not generally, not necessarily. But how can we find that balance of having less, but
I think it's down to what you feed grows, what you starve dies.
Mm-hmm.
The issue of yes, we live longer, and we live longer. Why? Because our medical services are better. We live longer because our nutrition is better. But when it comes down to happiness, we're not very high on the happiness scales. People that live in very poor environments can be very happy because they don't have all the stresses, the decisions, and the problems that we have.
Do you know and many? Do you deal with many like wealthy? I'm talking seriously wealthy. I don't know what that figure I can put on it really, but people that we would consider rich financially. Do you know many that are really happy? And any tricks that you can say from?
Well, no, the majority of people that I know that have a lot of money are people who have amplified the way that they are normally. It's a bit like if someone is a miserable person and you give them lots of money, you give them the opportunity to be really miserable in a really big way. If someone is very happy and you give them a lot of money, you give them the opportunity to be really happy in a big way. And it's much more to do with that. The money doesn't actually make people happy or unhappy. It just makes them more of what they are. You know, like money is like a magnifying glass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anything that makes you anxious, Sean? You're not perfect, are you? Surely.
Am I perfect?
Well, you've been doing your blood pressure a lot recently, haven't you? Checking that and syncing it to your phone and all that. So, when your blood pressure is spiking, what's going on in your life?
It's usually because I'm working too hard. When I stop working too hard, the blood pressure comes down. But my blood pressure is good now, having had a good go at it. I think that the things that make me anxious, if I was going to look at it like that, are things like silly we are as human beings and how we do have potential to destroy the planet. And I suppose there's one part of me that thinks, well, if we do that, well, life goes on in other forms. But it just seems like such a stupid thing to do. One of the things that interests me in working with people, you and I both have a Brexit interest, but one of the things I'm starting to pick up is whereas people got into Brexit because they were anxious and it was an anxiety response, the whole Brexit thing, I'm now coming across people that are now feeling that leaving Europe is creating anxiety for them. It's almost like there's the development of this anti-Brexit movement because people are now scared to leave Europe.
Yeah. There was a march, wasn't there, at the weekend in London?
I didn't know that.
European march. Right, I think 50 plus thousand people got together and waving blue flags and all that. And I think later on it was the, I had the wedding, so I was offline completely. Yeah. It was the night of the proms. And there's quite a big campaign dishing out European flags outside and inside, where it's usually Union Jacks waving, looking amazing. It was a lot of European flags, which I thought was pretty cool.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I like that.
Yeah. There are little glimmers of hope. But I don't know. Maybe I'm starting to think that we are going to get a second referendum on the final deal. But if we did, and let's say our side wins out, we stay. There's going to be a lot of unhappy people, aren't there?
So, whichever way you go, there's going to be unhappy people.
I don't know. Man. Yeah, it's crazy. I did actually manage to, even in my wedding speech at the weekend, manage to get a sneaky little Brexit line in. Because my brother and his now wife wouldn't be together if it wasn't for the EU and how easy it is, or how easy the EU makes it to hop between countries, you know, for economic migration. So I got a sneaky little line in there because there was a few levers in the audience. So I thought I'd stick the knife in a bit. But yeah, no, it's been a huge for our family. That you know, and there you go. So no anxiety for Sean apart from working too hard, hey?
I don't really feel anxious about anything that I can think of. I mean, when things happen in my life that need to be dealt with, I find that if I deal with them, the potential for anxiety diminishes. It's only when you don't deal with things and then you're worried about the potentials, like the ifs, buts and maybes, the uncertainties. That's when anxiety has got me in the past. So my thing is, if something needs to be sorted like that, I'll sort it. And then once I've sorted it, then it's not an issue.
I think we should talk slightly before we finish about technology and how that is fueling anxiety in terms of not just like having to wanting to own the latest bit of kit, but how we use that kit, and how people's Facebook, Instagram posts.
Yeah.
I don't know. I read an article about it recently. I'll try and find it and link it in the show notes. Basically, it was saying that by posting the best side of our lives, or only exclusively the good things that happen to us, we're really not helping our species, because we're basically doing it to make us not to help anyone else. We're doing it for really selfish reasons, to make ourselves appear to be pretty amazing and like superhumanly happy.
Yep.
And the outcome of that is that we make other people feel less fulfilled in their lives. So it was saying in the article, I'll try and dig it out, that we should try and, well, either not post anything or just post things, make an effort to post a more balanced view of how our lives are, and that would kind of be help everyone along a little bit.
But the crazy thing is, and this is part of our disease, I think, is that we all know that what people put on Facebook is going to be so manufactured and processed. It's a bit like processed cheese. And yet we still go along with it. You know, we still believe it. And people still need to respond to it and get kind of uppity about it and all that kind of stuff. And the whole thing's a nonsense. We know it's a nonsense, but we keep playing the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's something strange in the way that we do things, where we keep holding on to stuff that we know isn't real. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the bottom line is, most people want to find someone to be with. They want to raise kids. They want to reproduce. They want to have a good time. Yeah.
Have a good time reproducing. Yeah. Well, hand in hand. Go on. Sorry. I've thrown you off kilter there.
But the thing is, as you identified earlier on, you see people in very poor situations who are very happy. Yeah. Who don't have this need for technology. You know, they can have happy, easy lives.
Yep.
Yeah. But we choose not to. And that's the bit that's sad. But I think that when it comes back to that article about the Telegraph, and we're looking at people's well-being, what it's telling us is that our society, the way that we do it, isn't working. It doesn't make people feel good and safe and secure. The way we've learned to be as a society is that 60% of us have this anxiety disorder. That's crazy, if you think about it. Mm. Yeah, we need to be doing something about that.
Okay, that sounds like a good line to wind up on. Have you got a resource, Sean, something you want to
put out there? What I'm going to put as my resource is a book by Louise Hay. And if you don't know about Louise Hay, you need to go and Google her, because she was an amazing lady who's died recently. And the book that I'm putting up as a resource is You Can Heal Your Life. And it's the very thing that we're talking about. You know, you can get your life under control. You can get your life into a place where you want it to be. And her work is a very kind of spiritual kind of way of looking at it, really. But that's
very recently she died, didn't she? Like a week ago. Oh, wow. Yeah. Blimey. Oh.
Yeah, age 90.
I think we incorrectly said that she died in an early podcast like 3 or 4 years ago. Turned out that she was still going, but
she's doing very well. Yeah.
August 30th. Okay. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Just over nearly 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I've read that book.
Yeah. Her work is worth having a good go at. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Cool. I'm going to give another shout out to a film called Minimalism, a documentary. It's on Netflix. I think it's on Amazon as well. I'll link to it in our show notes. I watched it a while ago. I think I might have linked to it before, but simplifying your life. I think this can really help, especially because it's two kind of millennials or youngest chaps that are on this quest for a minimalist and a simpler life. So they've started off quite a movement, and it's all online. You can follow them on Twitter now and get involved quite actively in that community. So check it out. Mm.
Sounds good.
Are we all done? Anything else, Sean?
No, I'm good. I'm good. The sun's gone down here. I bet it hasn't for you.
No, it's still pretty bright out there-ish. It's been funny weather, man. I mean, since autumn is on the way, it's kind of lashing it down 1 minute and then sunny the next. So pretty windy out there. Good day to be a wind turbine.
I've always wanted to be a wind turbine.
Yeah, not a wheelie bin, though. Not an empty wheelie bin. okay, right, we'll end it there. Sean, you have a great week.
And you?
We'll catch up next time, hey?
We will do. Goodbye, everybody. You take care.
See you later, world. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.